Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for joining us on this hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon. I'm Marcus Peter. We have an exciting program for you today, and I'm greatly looking forward to it. We are starting with talking with my friend Andrea Picciotti-Bear about Mahmoud versus Taylor. Now, this is a case that will directly address the right to raise our own children. In a time when parental authority is directly under siege, this is a case that could reaffirm what the Constitution, common sense, have always made clear. Children belong, in a real sense, first and foremost, to their parents, to families, not to the state. In fact, it is unconstitutional to claim that the state has a greater claim and right to form and educate the life of a child more than parents. That's not founded. It's not true. And so Andrea has been at the forefront of numerous cases like this, and she's joining us to have this conversation. By the way, this case will be heard on Easter Tuesday. They'll be hearing oral arguments in this case. So we ought to be praying for this, because this is a case that can have pivotal value in the continued dialogue for especially the autonomy and right of parents to form their children according to right conscience. We go on from there to then talk about what Christ suffered during his passion. For you and for me, this is a very personal reality. This question of analyzing the suffering of Christ in his passion is crucial because it becomes a powerful source of reflection and meditation for us. In this post-Christian, overtly empiricist world that we live in, too much stock is placed in evidence. And yet, when we take a look at the preponderance of evidence, and in this case the medical analysis, of what Jesus Christ underwent, we can actually come to a meditative and even deeply spiritual realization of the price that had to be paid for our salvation. Now, medical science alone will never be able to fully encapsulate the magnificent sacrifice of Christ, but it's going to give us a window into how much more we should immerse ourselves in Jesus' sacrifice, because his sacrifice has won for us so great a salvation. We're joined by Dr. Tom McGovern to give us both a medical and spiritual analysis of what Christ endured for us. All this after the headlines.
Thanks, Marcus, and good afternoon, everybody. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, April 16th. It's the Feast of St. Bernadette, and today's news is brought to you by Visiting Angels, providing loving care and assistance for seniors in need at visitingangels.com. The state of Maine is facing a lawsuit from the federal government over the state's refusal to ban transgender athletes from women's sports. The lawsuit was announced by U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi this morning. Last week, a judge ordered a pause on a USDA funding freeze for Maine that was in response to the state's refusal to comply with President Trump's executive order aimed at banning transgender athletes from participating in girls' and women's sports. Vice President J.D. Vance will visit the Vatican during a trip this Holy Week. The trip is scheduled to last through Easter, during which Vance will meet with Vatican Secretary of State Pietro Parolin and Italian Prime Minister Giorgio Meloni. It is unknown if he will meet with Pope Francis, who is still recovering from an illness. Vance's trip will then take him to India, where he will meet with Prime Minister Narendra Modi. A federal judge is announcing potential contempt prosecution against White House officials. Judge James Boasberg wants to know why the Department of Justice did not turn around the deportation plans of hundreds of alleged Venezuelan gang members to El Salvador mid-flight. The White House says the order was oral, not written, and therefore not valid. The Archdiocese of Chicago has reinstated a priest to full ministry after a months-long investigation into child sex abuse allegations against him. Father Matthew Foley was removed from ministry in January after claims surfaced of abuse dating back to about 30 years ago. In a letter Monday, Chicago Archbishop Blaise Supich noted that Father Foley cooperated with the independent investigation, which found no evidence that the allegations were true. The female fencer who made headlines for kneeling rather than face a transgender opponent is stepping away from the sport. Stephanie Turner has been dealt a 12-month probation by USA Fencing. She is still allowed to compete, but says she is electing to step away from training due to the disruptions caused by her original protest. And stocks are down on Wall Street as investors are pondering on how to deal with global trade tensions. The U.S. announced tariffs on many countries, with some of those being put on hold for 90 days. However, tariffs remained against China, with a temporary exemption on duties against computers and smartphones. With your AveMariaRadio.net news, this is Brian Shanley.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mark Spita. On Easter Tuesday, the Supreme Court will hear oral arguments in a case brought by a group of parents from Montgomery County, Maryland, who object to the indoctrination of their pre-K through 8th grade children. And we discuss the case with Andrea Picciotti-Bear, who is legal analyst for EWTN News and director of Conscience Project, the Conscience Project. You can follow her work at conscience-project.org. Andrea, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing great, Marcus. Thanks for having me on, squeezing me in as we get ready for the tritium. It's really a great issue that we can talk about before we kind of turn our sights on what's before us at the supernatural level.
I agree. And it's an issue that's very pertinent to the sacrifice of Catholics, as well, especially Catholic parents, at the forefront of trying to form our children in right conscience and faith. So give us an overview of what's going on with Mahmoud versus Taylor.
Yeah, no, Marcus, this is really great. This has been a case that I've been watching since the district court first looked at it, even before the district court had a trial. It's in Montgomery County, Maryland, which is just, you know, the suburb outside of Washington, D.C. And the school board there in the fall of 2022 announced that they would be weaving through Pride storybooks in the pre-K through eighth grade language, or like I think it's the English language, English literature program.
Right.
And those Pride storybooks are really kind of shock the conscience. You know, there are some board books for the youngest ones that have kids look for things like, you know, a lip ring and leather, drag queen events, and also books that are geared towards confusing kids at a very vulnerable age regarding their biological reality. One is a boy that wants to present as a girl, and basically in the dialogue of the book markets is kind of, you know, you gasp when you hear about this. They say, you know, sometimes people make mistakes when a child is born. You know, who would those people be? Those are the parents.
Yeah.
You know, and so anyway, a group of parents of faith across a range of faith traditions objected. And they said, you know, we do not want our children to be exposed to these books. We want to be notified when they're going to be read so that we can opt our children out, consistent with a Maryland law, which happens across the country, allowing parents to opt their kids out of classes like sex ed. At first, the school board said that they would allow the parents to do that, and then they kind of backed away from that and said, no, it will be too complicated to allow you to opt your kids out because this is so much a part of our program, and we don't want anyone to feel alienated, so you just have to suck it up. And these parents said, you know, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
And they went to court. They filed a lawsuit in federal court claiming that it was a violation of their constitutional rights, both to free exercise and their rights as parents. They lost in the lower courts, but the Supreme Court, as we've been saying time and time again, really does understand the protections of the Constitution. They're going to be holding oral argument on Tuesday, as you mentioned, and representatives from the Trump administration Solicitor General's office is going to be speaking in favor of the parents' argument as well. So this is just really wonderful news in this case, and it's key not just in Montgomery County, but for, unfortunately, more and more parents who are finding out that their school systems have embraced gender ideology and are infusing this in the academic classroom.
It's unfortunate because throughout the entire trajectory of this case, 2022, there's this whole statement about the approval of storybooks by the Montgomery County. And initially, the statement is issued with, you have the opt-out policy. And then in March of 2023, so this wasn't even a year, not even, you know, just about, what, like 6 months? all of a sudden that opt-out policy is completely removed. And from that point on, parents have been essentially fighting for what are really foundational First Amendment rights. This, on the one hand, should be a no-brainer, but it's good that the Supreme Court is hearing this because they've demonstrated a capacity of adhering to these constitutional principles that you and I have been talking about.
Yeah, no, and Marcus, you know, a lot of people may say, well, just pull your kids out from these schools and homeschool, and that's a great option for many families, but it's not for all. And some of it is when you've got dual-income families, or in the case of the Morrisons from Montgomery County, their daughter has extreme special needs, and the supports that she can get in the public school classroom for her needs as a young girl with Down syndrome and autism and physical disabilities, they have pulled their daughter out of school, but to the tune of over $25,000 a year to be able to make up on their own, you know, budget, what the school was providing for them for free. So it involves extreme sacrifice, and sometimes for some families, that sacrifice is just cost prohibitive. So, you know, we don't want to create kind of a second class education system for Catholic families. We want our public schools to be just as good as the private schools are. And the first step is that parents' voices are heard, respected. And it's really important here to say these parents, Marcus, aren't asking for the books to be banned. They think that that's an issue for the school board, and they're pressuring on that front as well. But what they really are saying is we have a legal right to be able to shield our children from some formation that or malformation that goes against our religious beliefs. And we want to exercise that right freely.
And lest anyone think that these parents are kicking up a fuss that's, you know, much ado about nothing or more of a fuss than necessary, you know, a mountain out of a molehill. They appealed to the district court, and in 2023, the court denied them. It said that, you know, no one was coercing you to change your religious belief. It's just exposure. Then they brought it to the Fourth Circuit in 2024, and the same thing. There was no substantial, no one was forced to change their religious belief or conduct, so there was no free exercise burden. So now they have to take this to the Supreme Court. And they've gone through so much for what should be an appeal to basic natural law principles, that the parent actually has the right to decide what their children are exposed to.
Yeah, Mark, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, you keep wondering, like, were there any parents sitting on the bench in any of these cases? Because, you know, we partner with the schools, whether they're private schools or public schools, we partner with teachers, but we never cede our rights and responsibilities to assure the education and formation of our children. And for many young learners, being exposed to these very confusing and just outright wrong ideas is something that causes grave injury to the child. And a lot of parents, especially, like I mentioned before, the Morrisons, they said, you know, our daughter, we really need to be able to send her on the school bus saying, now listen to your teacher. And they said that there would be a big disconnect. Listen to your teacher, except, of course, when they read from this Pride storybook collection. You know, it's just too confusing. All they're asking for is let us to be able to pull our kid from exposing, you know, exposure from these kind of harmful messages. And you're absolutely right. Something is very, very confused and wrong that people would think that this is an appropriate topic to be raising with young kids. I would do a shout out to a number of school administrators actually wrote to the school board saying these books are wildly inappropriate. They're not age appropriate. They don't offer any educational value. We're not saying that, you know, kids that have gender confusion should be bullied. What we're saying, though, is that this collection is not going to be helping anybody in any way. So, you know, good for them to be advocating for their students.
You know, the parents really have been forced into a Hobson's choice here. And they're being told, no, you have the option of a both and. But really, they're choosing between their freedom of conscience and religion versus foregoing a public education, which should be their right to opt into and out of. Andrea, thank you so much. We will continue to follow this story. I'm looking forward to speaking with you next week. And blessed Holy Week to you and your family.
Thank you so much, Marcus. To you, too.
My guest, Andrea Picciotti-Bear, she and I have just been talking about the Mahmoud versus Taylor case, which will be heard, oral arguments will be heard on Easter Tuesday. We have to keep praying for this. Stay tuned. I'm Mark Speter.
Visit AveMaria.edu to see what's next.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. For the remainder of the hour, you and I are going to walk through a medical and spiritual dive of what Jesus underwent in his passion and his crucifixion, what Christ suffered during his passion, for you personally. For me personally, is a powerful source of reflection and spiritual meditation. We're joined by Dr. Tom McGovern, who gives us both a medical and spiritual analysis of what he endured for us. Tom is the author of What Christ Suffered, A Doctor's Journey Through the Passion. He also co-hosts Dr. Doctor, the official radio program of the Catholic Medical Association, which airs on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Tom, it's great to speak with you. How are you?
Thanks. Good to be here. And just to be clear, we actually sunsetted the radio show 2 years ago when I hit burnout and had to recalibrate my life. So it was a great run for over 5 years, but not doing that anymore.
Thank you, Tom. I apologize for that. That's fine. So I want to open here with this very important conversation about the fact that there is an almost empirical veracity to the sufferings of Jesus that therefore lends further credence to the gospel narrative. This isn't some kind of a mystical, mythological religion. It's grounded in a tremendous amount of historical and even medical truth.
Right. I mean, Catholicism is an incarnational religion. It depends on specific things that happen to specific people at specific times and places. And for Jesus, a specific place was Jerusalem, Calvary, which was actually a spent limestone quarry, so that the stone the builders rejected, they couldn't get good stone out of it, is where he died. And it was probably April 3rd, A.D. 33 is the most likely date, which happens to be a First Friday, mm-hmm. which is probably one origin for the First Friday devotion to the Sacred Heart.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. That's news to me. I will say devotions are one of those areas that continue to fascinate me. I'm still a relatively young convert. I'm, 14, sure. Going on 15 years now. Now, that being said, I want to open our conversation. We've been talking a lot about the question of suffering this week because
yes.
You can't talk about Holy Week without acknowledging this reality. So let's continue to grapple with this. We
sure.
have a kind of universal aversion to the notion of suffering. So, and you make clear, even the apostles didn't want to think about Christ's suffering, and yet this
right.
was the path that Christ wanted to use.
It was. Well, indeed. I mean, we talk about the passion. Passion comes from a Latin verb meaning to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And look, in the Garden of Gethsemane, he even feared the physical suffering he was going to have. He didn't want to go through it. But he immediately said, okay, I don't want to do this if it's possible, but if I have to do it, Father, I'll do your will. So I think Jesus can relate to all of us in the fact that we want to avoid suffering,
mm-hmm.
and we should avoid avoidable suffering. Some is not, but some is.
Right, exactly. Some is not, but some really is. And so suffering is a reality of the human existence. There's a distinction between pain and real suffering, but any suffering can have a redemptive quality when unified with Jesus' undergoing of suffering on the cross.
Well, that's the beautiful thing. I've written a course for medical professionals based on John Paul II's document, Salva Fici Dolores, mm-hmm. on the Christian meaning of human suffering. And that is right in the title. That is the meaning of suffering. The meaning of suffering is redemption. It is salvation. And as I say in my talks, that suffering and love are actually two sides of one coin, the coin of free will. God wants us to love, but to love, we have to choose to love him, which means we can choose not to love him, which therefore can lead to suffering. So it's a package deal this side of heaven.
So what you're saying is I can't say I'm a loving person if I'm not willing to undergo suffering.
Right. Well, even Bob Marley, remember the philosopher? No, he was a reggae musician, right? He said, you know, you're going to suffer. You just got to find the ones worth suffering for. And that's true. In fact, one of my favorite lines that is in my book, which came out of other people much smarter than me, was that the price of love is suffering. That's right. What love costs.
Yeah. You know, this reminds me of another philosopher, Jagger, who reminds us that you can't always get what you want. But if you try sometimes, it actually surprises me how secular culture, without meaning to, appeals to these very, very perennial Christian realities, which is, what we want can sometimes destroy us. And so looking at this notion of suffering, we don't want to suffer. We want to avoid suffering. And yet this is the path to become loving and selfless.
Yes. And, you know, one of the favorite things I've learned about suffering is the answer to that great question. Where was God when the blank, when the towers went down on 9/11, when the little kids suffering or that are starving in Africa, where were they? And the great answer is he is inside them suffering and dying with them.
Yep.
One of the best lines I read during the pandemic was that Christ did not come to take away suffering. Christ did not come to even explain suffering. Mm-hmm. He came to suffer with us. And there is a line in St. Paul's letter to the Colossians where St. Paul says he makes up what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ. And one of the true meanings of that in the church through the years is that his redemption is not complete until he has suffered within every single person what they are suffering with them and therefore applying the merits of his redemption to them.
And so we can talk about this on a very applied, practical level, too. I mean, I love that your book in Chapter 2 opens up with just the historicity of the event. And so you've got maps, and it presents a very tangible geographical reality of just how much Jesus had to walk, even after being scourged and everything. You get this sense that, wow, this was torture. There's no way around it. This was true physical torture.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And that's why I do that in the book. I've been to the Holy Land 3 times. And so after being there, I mean, that really helps me to bring it home. Mm-hmm. It's not some imaginary thing. It really happened there at that time.
And so let's talk about some of the things that happened. Chapter 3, you open immediately with this question of sweating like drops of blood or sweating blood, which, you know, if you know enough about documentaries, you've heard the term before. But explain to us in greater detail how there's a tremendous anguish and personal connection for us in what Jesus is undergoing.
Okay, so when he's in the garden, one of the things I came across this last year is one of the things he may have been thinking of is he spent many Passovers in Jerusalem. And when you're in there, you see the lambs that are slain. And the lambs are actually crucified. They are put on 2 stakes of wood, one of them going crossways through its shoulders. So he may have had this image as one of the many things going through his mind in the garden. Another thing that I just learned, I just this last weekend read St. Thomas More's The Sadness of Christ, the last thing he wrote before he was beheaded. In there he points out very well, how do we know Jesus sweat blood? Okay, the apostles, the closest ones to him were a stone's throw. It was night, even though there was a full moon. Could they have seen the sweating blood? Plus they were sleeping. So he surmises that Christ told them this after his resurrection. He really wants us to know that he sweat blood while he was there face down on that stone. There is a rare medical condition called hematidrosis, sweaty blood. Now, but what, and they've reported in the last 20 years over 60 cases, and I've got pictures of many of these, including the first American reported, and it's amazing. But what comes out of the skin, it can come out of any area of the skin, including areas without sweat glands. So like the tear ducts, the belly button, under the nails, on the tongue. So, and when they've done skin biopsies, there's no connection between blood vessels and the sweat glands, like people surmised years. But in one patient where they did the biopsy while it was happening, it was bizarre. The skin just split open next to where hair comes out. There are red blood cells out of the blood vessels in the skin, and they're just escaping there. And then these little holes close up that nobody ever sees except in this one skin biopsy. So the sweat and the blood mix on the skin surface, but they do not come out together from the sweat glands. And half of the patients have some kind of extreme thing happen. Like some of the reports are a girl seeing somebody beheaded, or a girl seeing her sister abducted and kidnapped, or some kind of physical abuse. But others happen while they're sleeping. It's really a wide array.
Tom, these breaks hit very fast. We are continuing this conversation with Dr. Tom McGovern, author of What Christ Suffered, A Doctor's Journey Through the Passion. And we want to do a deep dive today so that you and I can greater immerse ourselves spiritually and even mentally in imagination in joining Jesus in his suffering. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
For over 40 years, Leader Business in Ann Arbor has delivered top-quality copiers, printers, scanners, and software solutions, all backed by expert service. Rooted in faith and integrity, they ensure your operations run smoothly with fast response times and proactive maintenance. Join the many Catholic-owned organizations that trust Leader Business. Visit leaderbusiness.com or call 734-253-2534. Leader Business. Equip. Serve. Support.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
In the year 2149, in the time of Africa's great intellectual revival, a grand, comprehensive world history was published. One of its volumes told the story of the removal of several thousand prisoners from Auschwitz to a subcamp of Auschwitz called Blackhammer, more than 60 miles away. The history included accounts of those who had lived along the route and who had discovered bodies of prisoners who had died on the road. And those who read the account shook their heads, thinking, how could murder walk right by and no one had interfered? Also in 2149, those who read the same volume learned of places called abortion clinics, places in city centers where unborn children were routinely murdered 5 days a week. And those who read the account shook their heads, thinking, how could murder hold business hours? And no one had objected. GuadalupeWorkers.org.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes, without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. I am talking with Dr. Tom McGovern, author of What Christ Suffered, A Doctor's Journey Through the Passion. And we're talking really about the medical analysis, but also a spiritual insight into what Jesus underwent. So, Tom, I know we can spend a lot of time focusing on one aspect of Jesus' suffering. I want to make a passing statement for you to comment on, and then I want to move on to another area of his suffering.
Certainly.
The fact that you just shared this, because prior to your writing, really, I had been taught a long time ago that the mingling happened in the sweat glands, but what you're sharing now is that blood and water, quite frankly, came forth from Jesus' skin and then co-mingled on the surface. And that seems to lend greater credence to the purification by water and the word by water and the sacrifice of Jesus' blood for the sake of our salvation.
Yes, in fact, it's kind of a prequel to what would happen on the cross right after he died with the spear from which blood and water came forth. Keeping the sacraments, you know, the blood, the Eucharist, the water of baptism. I had not thought of the sweating blood that way, but I can definitely see, the analogy there. Something I'd like to point out with that is that hematidrosis is a high adrenaline state.
Right.
Just like when you're in fear or anxiety. But after going through that and allowing himself to feel that fear fully and not trying to escape the fear, for the rest of the Passion, Jesus has risen above everyone around him, and he's just at complete peace, totally focused on doing the Father's will, no more unease or fear at all once he accepts it.
It's profound to think about, that the willing embracing of the cross and you know, the drinking of the cup of suffering changes even the human trajectory of participating in suffering. And so to move on from there, then, from the garden,
sure,
to talk about the sufferings of Jesus in the night as he awaits trial.
Right. So when I went to Jerusalem, I was not aware that they have a place they venerate as the site where Jesus suffered beneath the house of Caiaphas from after midnight until sunrise when he was taken to the temple. And there is what's called the sacred pit there, which has been venerated at least since the 4th century during the 300s. And there have been four churches built on there. There's another one there, which has not yet been destroyed. French Assumptionists live there. And in this pit, there is a place where they think Jesus was, you know, he was spit on, struck, beaten with fists and open palms. There is also this tradition in Jerusalem, there is a second scourging pillar, or a second pillar, and this one is actually in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in the Catholic chapel part of it. And it, they thought, may have been in the basement of Caiaphas, is where there is a dungeon still today where you can visit. And he may well have been not scourged, but might have been whipped, at least with thin sticks, called verga in Latin.
And so tell us a little more about that, because the word that you keep calling him Dr. Luke, rightly so. I actually find that a little amusing throughout your whole book. But he highlights this. His choice of words are very specific here as to a kind of, in this case, dermatological suffering of Jesus.
Right. So he uses a Greek word for the type of suffering Jesus went through that night that none of the other gospel writers use. It's the Greek word derantes. So it starts with D-E-R, just like dermis and dermatology for skin. And that word, at least before the time of Christ, had the idea of flaying the skin open. But by the time of Christ, it had undergone a little change, and it just meant to beat the skin pretty severely. And if you look at the Shroud of Turin, and believe it's the burial cloth of Christ, I think that's the best explanation for its existence, by the way, there are actually marks on it that would fit being hit with small sticks that you'd be whipped with. Very different than with a scourge flagrum instrument. So if he was beaten with that, that wouldn't necessarily draw blood. It could, but it would be incredibly painful while he's up all night. His friends have deserted him. One denies him, although John comes back to follow him. He hasn't slept, hasn't eaten. He's got to be getting worn out already. And then the bloody sweat, would that have made his skin tender? We don't know. Probably not. He lost some fluid, and it probably made him shiver in the cold night, because remember, they had a charcoal fire outside Caiaphas's that night to warm up by.
Yeah. And Tom, this is all preceding the scourging. He hasn't been scourged yet, and he's already undergone a tremendous amount of suffering. So in your book, you highlight how just what he has undergone has put his body in a high tension, high stress, but also high pain state.
Sure, because the more pain you have, the easier it is to feel more pain. I mean, anybody who has experienced a tender area on their body, and anything else that happens seems to be magnified. So this is going to go just multiply for him and cascade.
So we don't often think about this. I think even in most movie depictions, by the time Jesus is brought before trial, so then it's before the scourging, we seem to think, hey, he's relatively okay, you know, he was just incarcerated, but nothing bad had happened yet. But if we read the narrative rightly, he appeared to Pilate already considerably bruised and battered. His skin was inflamed.
Correct.
And tender.
Well, just imagine what Caiaphas' guards did to him. It's right there in the Gospels. Yet I was one who for decades kind of glossed over that.
Yeah, likewise. And so then he gets, first of all, Pilate goes, you know, like, I'm innocent of this man, scourge him. And so that's the first thing, right? He undergoes scourging at the request of Pilate, but Pilate's being coerced into making this happen. So tell us about what's going on there.
So in Luke and in John, they say that the scourging was done to be the entire punishment, because Pilate intended to release him. So that could explain a more severe scourging, because they wouldn't want to scourge him too much so that they couldn't carry the cross.
Right.
So that might be one thing. So the scourging itself would have been with a weapon similar to some that have been found in the catacombs. It's metal chains, which at the end have little lead balls. Mm-hmm. And they might be round or they might be pear-shaped. And on the Shroud of Turin, they're always paired. And some of the instruments that they found that the Vatican museums have, which I have not been able to see when I've gone there, but I'd love to, there's over 360 of these marks on the front and back of the body on the shroud. So imagine lead ball hitting you over and over all over your body. Just on the chest, what's that going to do? It can cause so much damage that you start to get fluid and even blood buildup between the lungs and the chest wall. It can actually damage the covering of the heart, the pericardium, so that gets fluid and the heart can't beat as much, the lungs can't breathe in as much. And when you take a big breath, because you've hit the ribs so much, those ribs are tender, and the more they expand and you inhale, the more it hurts. So you don't want to take a big breath, but you need a big breath because you're in so much pain. So it's a catch-22 with the breathing. But you're causing bruising, contusions, and probably if you hit areas over and over, open, bleeding, wounds, which may have serum or blood coming out of them all over the body.
And this was designed, these ruling orders of the day, because it started with the Persians, really, that perfected is a terrible way to describe it, the way of crucifixion, but also scourging. And then you see this in different regimes throughout the day. The Babylonians had a different version and whatnot. By the time you come to the Romans, they had mastered a kind of craft of doing this. It was terrible because they knew how to extend the most amount of pain for the longest amount of time without bringing about death, because death had to come by an explicit order.
Correct. That is absolutely right. They wanted to get it bad enough so that by the time the victim got to the upright post to be put on it, they couldn't resist, but they had to be able to make it there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I agree with that.
So let's go on from there. Jesus is horrendously scourged. You've appealed to the shroud a few times. So we get a kind of visual of what Jesus is already undergoing. But as you mentioned, two of the Gospels tell us that the intent of Pilate was to scourge and let him go. And
correct.
That doesn't turn out to be the case.
No, because apparently a couple years earlier, he had put up shields, Roman shields, in the precincts where they could be seen with images that violated the Jews. The Jews complained to Rome, and Rome slapped Pilate's hand.
Yeah. We are continuing this conversation with Dr. Tom McGovern about what our Lord and Savior underwent throughout his physical suffering. This is a medical and spiritual meditation and analysis. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Join me, Elizabeth Jingle, host of The Heart of the Interior Life, for the Healing Gardens of Sacred Scripture Catholic Women's Retreat at the Augustine Center in Conway, Michigan, April 25th through April 27th. This silent, directed women's retreat is a journey of the heart to a trustful surrender to the heart of Jesus through the beautiful gardens of Sacred Scripture. For more information, visit elizabethjingle.com/HG.
Honey, did you ever call Mighty Dog Roofing of Ann Arbor for that free roof inspection?
I knew I forgot something.
Roof leaks can cause mold buildup or even roof collapse. Protect your family today by calling local Catholics Dan and Mary Flanagan at Mighty Dog Roofing for a free inspection of your roof, siding, or windows. Mighty Dog Roofing, 734-224-4916. That's 734-224-4916.
Spring into mowing season with a new Cub Cadet lawn tractor from Weingarts. We've been helping families like yours choose the right power equipment since 1945. Cub Cadet XT Enduro Series tractors are engineered to offer the best combination of quality, value, and performance. Cub Cadet lawn and garden tractors offer comfort and year-round versatility. Stop by our stores to help find your next Cub Cadet or visit us online at Weingarts.com. From our family to yours, thank you for letting us serve you.
Weingarts, everything.
This Easter, give meaningful gifts that keep on giving. Our Lady of Grace Bookstore in Ann Arbor has a terrific selection of Catholic books and gifts for your loved ones under age 18 and the young adults in your life. Pre-shop for ideas at OurLadyOfGraceBookstore.com. They're located in Ann Arbor at US 23 and M14 inside Domino's Farms Office Park at Lobby C. Follow them on Facebook and visit OurLadyOfGraceBookstore.com for directions and Holy Week hours. Mention this ad to receive 15% off your purchase.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jingle.
In the fifth rule of St. Ignatius of Loyola's 14 Rules for the Discernment of Spirits, St. Ignatius teaches that when we are experiencing spiritual consolation, the good spirit guides and counsels us more. When we are experiencing spiritual desolation, it is the bad spirit that guides and counsels us more. And as St. Ignatius teaches, we cannot find the way to the right decision. Father Timothy Gallagher writes, "The time of spiritual consolation is thus the time to accept the work of God, to be open, to listen, to receive the thoughts and inspirations arising from the consolation itself." Father Gallagher continues, "The thoughts that arise out of spiritual desolation, the guidance and counsel of the bad spirit we then receive, if followed, will always lead to spiritual diminishment." How has the good spirit been guiding your heart today?
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
Ann Arbor Smiles is a state-of-the-art dental practice led by the talents of Drs. Dan Kennedy, Chris Marzoni, and Stephen Gray. One of their many satisfied patients is Father Deacon Lawrence Hendricks.
I was one of the first patients to receive a Sarah crown from Dr. Kennedy. The Sarah technology allows for restorations to be done in one visit. They always use the most advanced techniques in dentistry. I've always enjoyed the friendly staff and the personal relationships that I have at Ann Arbor Smiles.
Go to AnnArborSmiles.com today.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at AveMaria.com. That's AveMaria.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. I'm talking with Dr. Tom McGovern, who is having a conversation with us about the medical and therefore even the spiritual meditation that we can undergo when we think about what Jesus physically went through in his passion and suffering. So, Tom, when we left off, we were talking about the scourging. So I want to round off that conversation by just acknowledging by this point the effects of the scourging and all of the trauma that Jesus has undergone before. So you mentioned earlier things such as, you know, potential pneumothorax, but pleural effusion, and there's a host of others. So just very briefly walk us through that. And by this point, Jesus's body is under a lot of tension.
Well, he's in a lot of pain, so his heart rate's up, his breathing rate is up, he's lost a lot of fluid, he's going to start to get lightheaded, have trouble focusing and staying upright. And that's going to get compounded with the mocking, which we probably don't have the time to go through, but mm-hmm. having a sharp crown of thorns driven through your head with reeds, which are basically like bamboo poles. So he's going to be in incredible pain, and his body is trying to keep up with its needs with less blood in it than he started with the day before.
So like you mentioned earlier, those thorns are significant, and they're part of that royal treatment that you rightly highlight in your
yes.
book. So he's undergoing psychological, deep psychological, emotional, and definitely physiological trauma, and now he's being made to carry the patibulum of the cross from where
yes.
he is to up Calvary.
Right, which is only about 400 meters from Herod's palace, where Pilate was staying, to Calvary, but on uneven streets. And, you know, in the Church of the Holy Cross in Jerusalem and Rome, there are relics reportedly brought back by St. Helena in the 4th century, and one of them is the crossbar, which was assumed to have belonged to the good thief. Whether or not that, they believed it was a crossbar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about 6 feet long, about 5 by 2.5 inches in size, and weighs about 15 pounds. But if you have that much pain, you're not seeing clearly, you're dehydrated, and you have it strapped probably with ropes around your arms, because we know that was typically done, it would be easy to lose your balance and fall forward.
Yeah.
And if you look on the Shroud of Turin, there's bigger swelling under the right eyelid than the left, so it's entirely possible that Jesus was listing one way, and when you fall forward, you turn your head to one side, it's probably the right side of his face that
mm-hmm.
hit the ground. It also shows on the Shroud, likely his right shoulder was lower than his left, may have even been dislocated. We don't know, but that's a possibility.
Yeah, yeah, and we also posit that because it is not an uncommon injury to be found amongst records of crucifixion victims.
I don't know that for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised with how hard they were beaten. What's interesting is only one of the Gospels tell us that Jesus carried his cross.
Mm-hmm.
Only John tells us. The other three tell us only that Simon did. But think about it. John was the only one who was probably there. You know,
yeah.
Matthew was probably hiding. Peter, who gave Mark information, was in hiding. And Luke, I don't think, would have been anywhere around there yet. So they heard about Simon and talked about him. But John saw Jesus carries his cross. And it's the only time in literature anywhere where somebody had to have somebody else carry their cross for them. There's
That's
no
right.
other record in literature.
That's right. We don't have another record like that. And so tell us, based on what we know about historical records, about the weight of what Jesus carried.
Well, like I said, the one that is in Rome right now that I've seen and photographed, there's going to be a nice picture of it in my next edition
mm-hmm.
of the book next year, weighs about 15 pounds. And that's the only piece of evidence we have for what the patibulum, the crossbar,
yeah.
would have weighed. And there is no example anywhere in literature of anyone ever carrying a two-part cross.
Right.
And there are even inscriptions that give basic instructions for the people that are going to carry this out in Rome. And they had to supply the upright post at the site of crucifixion and then the crossbar that would be carried to the site of crucifixion.
Right. So the steepest would be at the site of the crucifixion, basically awaiting them. So
yes.
Let's move on from there then. Let's talk about his crucifixion proper. So we are Good Friday. He's walked his way despite tremendous trauma all the way
yes.
up Calvary, and now this begins that ordeal of the crucifixion.
Yes. So the word patibulum comes from a verb meaning to stretch out.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have laid him down on the back of it, probably still roped to him, stretched out his arms, put nails through his wrists, which actually would match history, the earliest images of crucifixion from the 2nd and 3rd century, as well as the Shroud of Turin, used a large spike. It wouldn't have broken any bones. It wouldn't have severed any nerves. It would not have gone through any large blood vessels. And his arms would have been mainly horizontal on that. We do not know how they put people on the cross. But on that crossbar, that patibulum that's in Rome, there's a 1-inch diameter hole right in the center of it.
Mm-hmm.
I just noticed that, you know, my last time there, 2 years ago. And so this may well have gone on some spike protruding from the top of the stipes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that, but that's entirely possible. And then how did they fix his feet? There are now 3 archaeological finds of heel bones, 2 with nails and 1 with a hole in the same location, 2 of them going from the outside of the heel in, 1 going from the inside of the heel out. So likely the legs straddled the cross with a spike through each heel bone right underneath the part of the heel bone that bears the greatest weight of the body. And that would be very easy to do versus trying to put 1 foot on top of another. That would have been horribly hard for a soldier. And when you put a spike through a live heel bone, it does not break the bone. So keeping with scripture that none of his bones will be broken.
Right. And so you include some technical detail about the space in the hand or the arms wherein the spike might have went through. And if done right, it doesn't break any bones, but it also sustains the weight of the individual.
Oh, yeah, because so you think of, you know, if you have heard of carpal tunnel surgery, well, there is a thick fibrous band of cartilage that wraps the 8 wrist bones, which are in 2 rows of 4.
Mm-hmm.
And if you put a spike anywhere near the middle of the wrist, as Dr. Pierre Barbet in his research and a Dr. Bevilacqua and others in Italy have shown, it always finds its way between these 4 bones called the space of Destot, named after a French anatomist, without breaking anything.
Mm-hmm.
But because there's that tough cartilage surrounding it, you are fixed firmly and you're not going to tear through that.
So you end your inquiry on the crucifixion proper by talking about the exercise of priesthood from the cross, and Jesus does this by means of the door that he enters through is the door of his own suffering. And so tell us about that.
Well, what is the essence of priesthood? The essence of priesthood is offering sacrifice on behalf of others for their salvation. And so when we are baptized as priest, prophet, and king too. So in his priesthood, he is both the priest and the sacrifice, the willing sacrifice that could atone for us and for our sins. But now that Christ lives in us after baptism, as long as we're not in a state of mortal sin, we have, you know, the life of Christ within us, we can also offer our suffering to affect eternity, because we can affect someone else's salvation through our acts of offering up.
Mm-hmm.
So really, offering it up is a superpower that can affect eternity, unlike any of these, you know, superheroes you see on TV.
Yeah.
That doesn't affect eternity. We can, and we can do that every day.
So in light of the fact that he is high priest and offering, and he's hanging upon that cross, making himself both, he really is the Passover lamb and the high priest, and also the temple. His body is the temple of the new covenant sacrifice and offering. I want to go back to a quote by Dr. Barbet that you quote in your book, that the major effect of crucifixion has to do with hypovolemic shock. You're looking at asphyxiation because your normative respiration has been greatly hampered and interrupted.
Actually, that's false. I'm doing everything I can in the world to show that there is no evidence for that. I published a peer-reviewed paper a few years ago. Suffocation probably had nothing to do with how crucifixion victims died, but that'd be another haul. But I believe it's with the shock, because when you lose all that fluid and your heart's beating harder,
mm-hmm.
you get into your pH gets off and acidosis, your chemicals, your potassium and sodium get off. And what can happen then is you can either die of that outright, or it can cause an irregular heartbeat,
right,
an arrhythmia, which explains how Jesus could know that he only had minutes left to live. Because if you go into ventricular tachycardia, when the bottom part of the heart starts becoming the pacemaker instead of the top, you start to get, you might get nauseous, mm-hmm. you might get pain in your chest, you might get lightheaded, and you know something is wrong. And that would give Jesus enough time to say, I thirst, to say, it is finished, and into your hands I commend my spirit. Because Jesus cries out in a loud voice at the moment of death, which you cannot do if you're suffocating.
Right. So, yeah, I brought that up because you seem to be one of the few opponents to the theory. And I will say, a theory as it is, some of your answers to it are rather substantial, especially including the fact that with a loud cry he delivers his spirit, or as you quote in the scriptures, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit.
Right. And that's it. See, the whole idea for this breathing thing was based on some doctors seeing this punishment or this torture where people's wrists are tied together, either behind them or in front of them. They're hung up, and then they will suffocate in one of those positions if not taken down within half an hour or so. Mm-hmm. The problem is, that's not crucifixion. In crucifixion, most of the weight is on the feet. In that, all the weight is on the wrists.
Right.
And so there have been studies done by at least two physicians of people on crosses with wrist gauntlets. None of them have trouble breathing. If you look through the ancient literature, there's no examples of people having trouble breathing, going up and down in the cross. But they yell, they spit, they cry, and they can live for days.
Right, exactly. They've been known to live for almost over a week at a time. Tom, I could continue on, but thank you so much for making the time to speak with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a blessed Holy Week.
You too. My guest, Dr. Thomas McGovern, he's the author of What Christ Suffered, A Doctor's Journey Through the Passion. Thank you for joining us. I'm Marcus Peter.